I'm the third of nine. We're nine of us in our family. We're four boys first and five girls after. How can I start? When I was young, I was sexually abused. I can't say I started drinking at a young age because I only started drinking when I was like 13. I don't find it young anyway. 13. My first drunk was terrible. I actually got drunk one day with my friends, and they were all of age, of course, and living on a reserve, it's quite different than the city, so my mom caught me drinking, and I freaked out, and I went home, and I pulled out the rifle, and I started shooting around. So from there, even before I started drinking, my parents and I didn't see eye to eye, and I didn't get along with them. I was always, I rebelled against them all the time because they were always looking at my older brothers and my baby brother and my sisters. You know, I was always the quiet one in the corner. So I didn't really listen to them. I didn't really give a shit about anything. And I started drinking, and it was like I wanted to be like my older brother. I wanted to go out, drink. I wanted to fight. I wanted to make trouble, and that's what I did. But before I started drinking, my brother used to beat me with his friend there. You know, one would hold me, and the other would punch me, and I really. At first I was crying, but I got used to it. I got used to getting hit and slapped around and pushed around. So after a while, I started drinking and I started fighting back, and to me got better for me when I started pushing back. I started feeling I was holding my ground, and every time I'd go out, a lot of my friends would ask me to help them out fights, and that's what I always did. And I don't know what made me do it, but it was the attention I was getting, and it was easy. It was easy for me to do it, and because I really enjoyed it. So, a lot of the times my friends would take me out and buy for me and, get me drunk and send me in a brawl, and, they'd just to stand back and look at me. And, there was a lot of times I'd get back up and I'd go and see them and ask them why they didn't help or anything, and they never had an answer, but let's go have a beer. So, it was always like that. And, I've been in and out of juvenile facilities because I was drinking. I was always getting into trouble. I hit 18. I went home. My first month was it was all right, but by the end of that month, I started drinking with my brother-in-law and two of my friends, and I don't know what I was thinking, but at the time I was going with them, and we end up at this party, and my brother-in-law end up robbing these guys, and I helped them out by holding back one guy, and he was robbing the other, and the fingers got pointed at me, and so I was charged with armed robbery, and I was sent away for 19 months while the others were all sitting back at home laughing, and when the day came that I got out, man, my brother-in-law really, he knew he had something coming, but he didn't know what. So I seen him, he started laughing at me when he seen me, and he says, "How was it?" "How was it?" I couldn't believe he laughed at me and he asked these questions, and I just cracked him. I couldn't take it from him, and Anyways, I kept drinking from there, and I hit the hard drugs, and the drinking got worse, and you know, found myself a girlfriend, which wasn't a good idea at the time, but you know, that's I could say that's where my family life started, and it didn't last too long. Well, not last too long, but I ended up 8 years and a half with her. I had two daughters, but in the 8 years, it was terrible. When I first met her, we were both drinkers. We were both doing cocaine. We were I was smoking pot on the side, and I just, you know, with the girlfriend I had, I knew I wasn't gonna go very far. So, you know, I kept myself in a relationship anyway, and because I was so dependent on her, and it was like I don't know, I was stuck in there. I couldn't get out. And anyways, 8 years down the road, two daughters, you know, I end up splitting up with her because I couldn't take it anymore. And you know, when I did split up with her, she ended up with another guy right away, and you know, that really fucked my head right up. And that's when I really took it to myself to drink every day, and I had a good job, and that's what kept me going. I'd drink every day, I'd get up, you know, I wouldn't eat for days on end. And I remember the first week that when she told me that, you know, I just drank every day, and I didn't eat. And I remember sitting at my friend's, and I fell over because, you know, I didn't have any energy or anything. I was just always drinking. And anyways, everything got worse and worse. And one day I was partying at my place, and there was quite a few of us. There was a party next door, and this woman came over crying, and she came in the party, and says, this man started to touch my kid, and I just went crazy. I was all high on coke, I was drunk, and I just, you know, I jumped up and I said, "What?" And she said it again, and I ran over and I beat the living daylights out of this guy, and he ended up in a coma anyway. And yeah, it was he was in a coma for 2 weeks. And then, you know, when I heard that, you know, I was scared for maybe a few hours, but you know, it didn't really affect my drinking because I went right back to it. And I knew my life wasn't going anywhere at the time, so I didn't really give a shit about anything. And at last, my mom told me he got up. He was out of the coma, and you know, he had to start speaking again and start walking, just start everything all over. And during my trial, I was in trial for 16 months, and they let me go. And you know, I still didn't learn anything, and I was walking the streets yet, drinking. And you know, by the time my sentence came up, my lawyer wanted me to do 2 years, and the prosecutor wanted me to do six. And you know, two for me wasn't enough for me, and six was too much, because I know I wasn't gonna go anywhere with either number. So I was really grateful that the judge gave me 4 years. And when I entered the penitentiary, for the first 6 months, I was having wicked withdrawals. You know, I was sweating, and I was just really, it was terrible anyway. And on Christmas Day, because I was sentenced in October of 2005, Christmas Day, I couldn't take it anymore. So, you know, I smoked the joint and started feeling a little bit better. But, you know, the drugs are expensive, so I slacked off till I got to the actual place they were sending me. For the first few months, you know, I was drinking inside. I met some bikers. I met a lot of good guys in there anyway, and the drugs were cheaper. The alcohol was cheap. I drank in there for a few months until June 2006, and that's when I decided to stop because I couldn't take it anymore. And I was always thinking about what am I going to do when I get out here? Am I going to be the same and all that shit? And, you know, I couldn't take it anymore. And I had a friend I was going to AA inside, and he kept bugging me to go. And at last, one day, I just gave up and I went. And, you know, I took my time and sat there around everybody. But I was quiet. I was always in the back. And I wasn't that, I didn't talk that much. Anyways, from there, you know, I started doing the meetings, and I started laying off the pushers of the alcohol and the drugs. You know, I started laying off of them, and I started playing poker, and that was keeping my time occupied. And but it wasn't any better anyway, because poker is just as bad. I was playing poker every day for a few hours, you know. Sometimes I'd go down, sometimes I'd get up. But my first few games, I really went down, man. And, you know, he always told me, you know, you got to pay your debts by this time, and if you don't, you're going to get it. And I was always, like, watching over my shoulder, and because I owed a lot, and then I start knowing more people, and I start making debts with others, and playing poker for hockey, you know, and all this stuff, baseball, football. And at last I was sitting in my cigarettes, like, I had too much, and having too much, it wasn't very good, because if the guards caught you with it, you were selling. You were charged with selling. And I had my cigarettes all over the pen. All the guys, give some away so they'd watch anyway. And on my first parole hearing in 2007 of January, they asked me if I was ready to get out, and I told them I wasn't ready, because I told them straight up. I said, if you let me out today, you know, I'll just end up back here in a week or two. And I knew it. So, you know, I accepted. They told me, okay, give us 2 minutes. We're going to talk about it, see if we're going to let you go. And it didn't take very long anyway, and they brought me back in. They said, okay, you could stay here. But they told me I was going to go to a minimum security, and, you know, that's where I kept doing my follow-ups with the psychologists, my substance abuse, and my anger management. Everything started in the medium penitentiary where I was, and I really enjoyed the programs. It really taught me to look at myself. When I got to the minimum security, you know, it was totally different. It was very, very different for me. It wasn't the same atmosphere. It was too quiet. There was too many, I don't like to say it today, but sex offenders. I couldn't take it with them. In the first month I was there, I kept asking them to send me back to the medium security because I couldn't take it. But anyway, they told me, wait a few months, try it out. Just don't talk to them, you know, and there's too many. There was like 85% of them were sex offenders, and I couldn't. Everywhere I'd look, you know, all my friends would tell me, yo, him, and like, shut the fuck up, man. I don't want to hear this stuff. I don't want to hear it. Anyways, I met one guy. He was all right there, you know. He did his pills, but I told him what I was, and that I was doing AA meetings inside, CA meetings. So, you know, he kept his distance with his drugs, and he asked me to bunk with him in the same cell, and I did, and that's where I learned not to trust anybody. He made me do it, because I said, okay, you know, he seems like a nice guy, and he told me why he was in, and I ended up being a vice president of the penitentiary, of the inmates, and he was causing some havoc with the sex offenders, and I don't know, this guy, I don't know, he just made me put up a shield anyway, and but anyways, I don't really like to chat about that, but, you know, anyways, he ended up being a sex offender himself, and he was sorry that he brought me in the same room as him, because he ended up getting shipped out anyway, because he was scared. He was scared for his life, because he told everybody why he was in, that he was a drug dealer and all that, and everybody hung around him, and his so-called reputation just deteriorated in his face. But anyways, yeah, my first outing from the minimum security was at the CA meeting in at WOW, and a year later I got my day parole, and I remember that meeting. I just remember that meeting. It was on what street, and you know whereabouts it was. So when I left the halfway house on Friday evening, and I said I'm gonna go put myself on the street, start walking. I know it's around here around that time, so that's what I did. And it took me a little while to find it, but I did. And man, I felt very, very good in this meeting, because you know it's so. For me, it's the right mood, because the people are loud, and you know they swear, and you know it's my kind of place. And that's where I started knowing all the people, and people were asking me if I wanted to do AA meetings, and of course I wanted to. I wanted to be all over. I wanted to do my 90 and 90. Call my sponsor. Because I met my sponsor, he was the sponsor of the medium security penitentiary. He used to do the meetings in there, and that's where I met him, and still today he's my sponsor. And I just let myself be. I was up to, I don't know, maybe 20 meetings a week. You know, I was just really going crazy on them, and it was my life for the first few months, because it was really there was a few things that happened to me while I was out. You know, first few days, I was walking behind this guy in the metro, and he was going up the escalator or whatever it is, and he dropped his pot, because he stuck his hand, and I don't know what he was getting, but his pot dropped, and he walked up a few steps, and I seen it, and I said, whoa. I said, wow, this could be. So I went and looked at it, and it was pot, and I said, I'm going to throw it in the garbage. I have to throw it in the garbage, and you know, my head was playing. You can't throw it in the garbage, because you know it's going to be there. So, you know, I went and give it back to him. I actually went and give it back to him. I tapped him on the shoulder, and I gave it back to him, and he just looks at me like, are you fucking stupid, man? But I don't know. I knew that was the right thing to do for me, because I would have probably turned around and went and smoked it or something. Yeah, there was a few occasions in the metro, you know. Like, there was one day I was going registering myself back in the school, and I got on a metro. I was going down to La Salle, and I seen a bag of coke right in the metro, man. And I didn't touch it or anything. I seen the bag, and I seen it, and it wasn't very far from me. And I was there was not too many people in the metro, and you know, one stop came, and I was still sitting there. I was really thinking about picking it up. Then the door was closed, and I was still, you know, I was really hesitating. And the next stop came, and I just said, oh, I gotta get out of here, man. If I touch it, if I pick it up, I'm gonna keep it with me. And so I jumped out, and you know, I had to take the next metro. And even on that same morning, I was on a bus, and you know, I just happened to my mouth just happened to water for a beer, and I see this guy walking out of the debonair with a nice cold beer, drinking it. And I said, "Wow!" I said, "I gotta go home. I gotta do something. This day is not right for me." I wasn't using my sponsor too often anyway, and I don't know why, but hard head, I guess. I don't know, stubborn. But anyways, yeah, it's been quite the struggle since I've been out. But, you know, life has really turned around since I've been coming to these meetings. I love the people in the meetings. They're very... I don't know, everybody greets people with open arms, and you know, it's really nice to see that the fellowship is like a community and people are so close. Because you know, it's a very big change for me coming from the reserve to the city, and especially my reserve is very small, and you know, it's all you get is if you get a salute, you get get a finger, you know, like fuck off, you know, like it was really. I found it really bad anyway. And on my reserve, I kind of speak for all reserves, you know. And my reserve was quite something. We always fought amongst each other. We always cheated. We mostly did our fightings in the town, but you know when it was during the week, we'd fight each other, you know, just to, I guess, to get out some stress or some anger. Because, you know, we on the reserve never learned to deal with our problems properly. And I'm just grateful that where I am today and the people that I know. And it's so wonderful. I love the city. Which I never thought I would, because it was so big, and you know, like you look on the movies, it's so dangerous. But you know, I don't find it dangerous at all. And actually, you know, I just don't. I have fear in the city, but I don't show it. It's for me. It's one thing I will never easily show. Anyway, I won't show my fear that easy. But anyway, since I've been in, I met wonderful people, and a lot of people in the fellowship get me to work for them, because I don't know, I just work hard, and you know, I worked for a few people, and I guess the word got around, and now a lot of people are asking me to work for them. But my mind is set on working for masonry, and right now I'm in school in the evenings. I'm taking up automobile mechanics, which I really like. I really like working with my hands. Finally, it took me this long to get my high school diploma, and you know, I really feel great. It's something I never thought I would accomplish. So, you know, I'm still working on some goals, and, you know, I'm real grateful to be here tonight. I'm really glad Sandy asked me, and I've been slacking off there a little, I'd say, past 2 months and a half, and, it's time for me to get back in these rooms, because, you know, I really don't want to end back to where I was. And I don't know, there's not much more I could say, but I wish everybody a happy 24 hours, and I want to thank you all for listening.
Thanks very much, Archie. I'd like to encourage everyone after the meeting to thank Archie and get to know him better. But right now, on behalf of the group, Grant will be thanking
Archie. Hi, everyone. My name is Grant. I'm an autologist. It was about a year ago, I guess, when I dedicated myself to going to lots of meetings, and one of the first people I met was Archie. And I always liked hanging out with newcomers that love to be at meetings and love to get sober. And every time I saw Archie, and we saw a lot of each other last summer, and did a lot of extracurricular stuff, like playing softball and a lot of fun things. And always had a great smile on his face. And as I didn't relate to your story, but I certainly related to the feelings. And you know, you're doing a lot of really positive things, and I want to thank you for sharing your story tonight.
There are no tips or tricks that I'm aware of this evening, but we do have a common tradition. AA does not accept any contributions, financial or otherwise.